May it please the court. My name is Dennis Whittlesey, representing the plaintiff or the appellant Amador County. At the table with me is my partner and colleague Aaron Gravelin, a member of the Bar of the State of Michigan. Unless the court has questions about standing, which we think we've fully addressed in our briefs, the issue I want to talk about is the issue that we appealed, which is whether there can be Administrative Procedure Act review of a no-action approval of a gaming compact under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, or as I call it, IGRA, others say IGRA. That's a school of thought that is widely divided. We believe that the court was absolutely wrong in citing the cases that it did for the proposition that there should be no appellate review and for the proposition that it had been adjudicated. In the first place, the court largely relied on a Florida case in the Northern District of Florida, PPI, in which the court cited the lower court decision in Lac du Flambeau, but ignored the subsequent, but prior to its decision in Florida, the Seventh Circuit's determination that the basically rejecting the obiter dicta upon which the PPI court was relying. And so our contention, well, I know of no court that has stated that the no-action compact approval is not subject to APA review. Our position.
You know one that says it is.
The only two that I know of are the lower court in Lac du Flambeau and the PPI court relying on that case in Florida and our court. And actually the lower court in Lac du Flambeau sort of said that but did not, but it was obiter dicta. But I think the important thing is that in the Seventh Circuit looked at Lac du Flambeau, it expressed the statement that denied the appeal on other grounds that there was no secretary review. Now the secretary argued, no APA review. The secretary argued that, and the court observed that, well, there might be counter arguments to the secretary's opinion, the secretary's decision, logic in this case, but they were not made in that case.
And what would there be to review other than what the statute leaves open, that is the consistency of the gambling contract with the statute? Is there anything else to review?
No. In this case,
and nobody says we can't review the consistency with the statute, do they?
All right. The secretary had three decisions. He has a choice of three decisions. He can approve it affirmatively. Mm-hmm. He can disapprove it, but he may do so only if it is illegal, and or he can allow it to become final by operation of law. And then the bromide is, well, to the extent that it's not inconsistent with the law.
So the only thing left for us to review would be the consistency with law, with IGRA or with the statute, right?
That would be correct, Your Honor.
Right. So do you really need this argument about whether the Secretary's decision is reviewable, quote decision, close quote, is reviewable per se, since all we could review anyway is the same thing the statute leaves open, and that is the consistency with the act, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. But okay, except for the fact that there's the meaning of the law, and the court said, well, there's discretion as to allowing an illegal compact to become law, except in this instance, going to Overton Park, there is a standard. There is law to apply, which is whether or not Indian.
How is the contract inconsistent with the statute?
With the statute?
Yeah. The only issue we have here is whether this is Indian land, right?
The statute says gaming can only be conducted on Indian lands.
Right.
And so our allegation.
Said, isn't that the only issue here?
That is
Indian land.
That's the issue. The issue here is whether there should be APA review at the lower court, because the court dismissed it with no consideration of the issues. He just simply said, citing PPI in the lower case decision in Lac du Flambeau, that there's no administrative review of a. I'm sorry?
Since it is an issue of law, we can take that de novo, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So where. Isn't the issue then really whether this is Indian land or not?
Well, we never got there.
We're looking at the same thing the district court did.
All right.
We defer to them.
Then let's go there.
Agency cases where there is agency review, the district court doesn't bind us pursuant to any standard of review. We're looking at it anew.
And the government, just to focus on this, the government's position is the legal issue here is easy because of the Hardwick judgment.
I'm sorry, Judge Sentell, I didn't hear that.
That the government says, look, the legal issue, Judge Sentell, Chief Judge Sentell asked you whether the only issue is whether or not the compact is in compliance with law, and that turns on whether it's Indian country, right?
And that's
correct. The government says, the Hardwick judgment says it's Indian country. So if we agree with you that this is a reviewable decision, then why doesn't the Hardwick judgment resolve the only legal issue that you've conceded is before us?
The Hardwick stipulation?
Yeah.
Well, I think we've addressed that. The Hardwick only precludes our raising the reservation issue.
Well, but suppose we don't agree with that. I mean, I understand your argument. Your argument is that this was about taxes and that we should view all this language in the Hardwick decree as relating only to taxes, right?
That was Hardwick.
But that's not what this says. I mean, it says the Hardwick agreement is very broad. It says the ranch area is declared to be Indian country. It doesn't say is declared to be Indian country for purposes of county tax assessments. And the county goes on in the judgment to agree that it will be treated like any other reservation under all federal laws applicable to them.
Well, Hardwick also, though, if you read it, Judge Tatel, in its entirety.
I did. I read it in its
particularly
entirety
when, completely.
I did. I read the whole
and,
thing.
And so you, if you'll notice, though, the parties to Hardwick are Amador County through its Board of Supervisors and its tax assessor, and what is described as the class plaintiffs, the members living on the land at the time of termination. Mm-hmm. So that it's an individual Indian, presumably, although never named, and the county, and it was a tax settlement.
But indeed, I'm talking about the language of the agreement itself. The language of the agreement is far broader than just a tax settlement. You've got these stipulations in here that are pretty broad, and I'm just saying, I'm asking you the question. Suppose at this stage of the litigation, we don't buy your argument that we should view this broad language in terms of just being a tax case.
Well,
what do we do then? What do we do at that point?
I guess all I can say to that is the only reason why we should be bound by that stipulation is the product either of collateral estoppel or res judicata. And the principles are not present in this case for the application of either principle.
Why is that?
Well, because
in your brief, you point out that that issue preclusion applies even when you have a consent judgment, and it turns on the question of the intent of the parties, right?
Well, I think we laid out why those principles don't apply. We did stipulate it should be treated as Indian country. However, Indian country has three definitions under Section 1151, and it could be one of any three that we were stipulating to. That was not spelled out. This was a very inarticulate document drafted and presented to us for execution.
This is the only document we have before us. We can't take evidence on it. We can't hear testimony. We just have this document in front of us.
That's the document.
Contains these very broad stipulations.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. You have a low voice, Judge, and I'm hard of hearing.
Here, let me see what I can do. Those automated telephone machines can't understand my voice either. So.
You've always been very articulate in my
experience. So I guess, and you argue in your brief it's a question of what the parties intended, right?
Correct.
Okay, well, how can we decide that? Don't we have to remand it?
Well, I would respectfully submit it does need to be remanded for consideration because there was no consideration of the merits.
Okay, and what would you show if we were to do that?
If we go back to below?
Yeah, what would you show? What sort of evidence would you introduce to show that we don't now have before us that this document is something narrower than it looks like? How would you make your case? In other words, do we need a remand? What do you have other than your interpretation of this language?
Well,
because we can do that, right?
You can't.
We only need to remand it if we have to, if we need evidence.
You can't do that, Your Honor. And if you look at paragraph 2F of the stipulation, it specifically said that if the statutory, if the agreed upon deadline for trust status of this land is not met, then the individual Indian can be assessed tax on his property unless by the county, unless and until he files a tax exemption form. Well, this property is not even owned by an individual Indian to which the stipulation pertains.
Where is the title now?
The title is held in fee by the Buena Vista Band of Miwok Indians. And that's affirmatively and clearly alleged in our complaint, I believe, at paragraph 15. So that the reservation status would be inconsistent with paragraph section with
about
section 2G.
The term Indian lands definition in section 2703-4B. Any lands title to which is either held in trust, ellipses, or held by any individual tribe.
Correct.
Why isn't that within the definition, which is the applicable definition here under 2703-4B?
It would be if this is reservation land.
That doesn't say reservation land. It defines Indian lands two ways. The first of which is all lands within the limits of any Indian reservation. The second land definition says any lands title to which is either held in trust by the United States for the benefit of any Indian tribe or individual, or held by any Indian tribe or individual, subject to restriction by the United States against alienation, and over which a tribe exercises government.
All right, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Okay.
Yeah, so why
is the land is not in trust. It is owned in fee by...
Not in trust, but it's the title is held by an Indian tribe. It is possible that there is not an alienation restriction which could take it out of 4B, but I don't know that from the record.
All right, that is and that's not been an issue in this case. Restricted fee is a very narrow ownership status, which I think government counsel would agree, and it's frankly, other than in states such as Oklahoma, fairly rare. In this case, though, if you look at the land determination opinion written by the NIGC's general counsel and concurred in by the Office of Solicitor and Interior, but not the secretary, it stated that the genesis or the foundation for the claim for gaming is reservation status. And indeed, that's precisely the way the tribe pursued it. So reservation status.
Go back to the stipulation.
And that goes back to the stipulation. But if you look at the stipulation, the very notion of reservation status is inconsistent with paragraphs F and G, 2F and G, which says, hey, if this individual Indian does not get this land into trust by December 31, 1988, the land can be taxable once again, unless the individual Indian, but by the way, not the tribe, will file tax exemption forms in a form agreed upon by the parties. So that the notion of a permanent reservation status is absolutely belied by the Hardwick stipulation itself and by subsequent facts. So I think we get back to whether this is a reservation as a matter of law, because that's the foundation for the land determination's opinion, and indeed that's the premise under which this case, I believe, Ms. Hazard will agree, has been...
Are you asking us to rule that or to remand, since the district court didn't look at this issue, to remand it to the district court? In other words, to rule that this is reviewable, that A, you have standing, B, it's reviewable, that is, the secretary's non-action, and C, to therefore remand the district court to address this question. Is that what you're seeking?
That's correct.
Which is
you're not asking us to actually make the judgment about what the...
No, argument. I wrote the Section 3, Judge Tatel, almost as a to explain the case a little bit, the underlying case, but we're not asking for that relief.
Okay, you're asking
for remand so we can have a hearing in front of the judge.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. Good.
Thank you. I think I used all my time, so I guess if I could...
give you back a couple of minutes.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Catherine Hazard here on behalf of the Secretary of the Interior. Regarding standing, I just wanted to make a couple of points regarding prudential standing.
Right. Now, constitutional standing is pretty well taken out of the case by that intervening decision in Patchak, right?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor.
You don't think so?
No, I don't.
Well,
because in...
Now, I will agree that you had a good constitutional standing argument prior to Patchak, but Patchak came down after your brief, and you did not have a chance to deal with it, but why doesn't that answer the question?
Well, Patchak, first of all, it involved the Indian Reorganization Act, not IGRA. But,
I understand that, but weren't
right,
the
but
asserted injuries
similar
and causation and redressability very parallel to what we have here?
The allegations of injury are very parallel, Your Honor, but in Patchak there was no agreement by the plaintiff to treat the tribe in a particular way. So
and
it's
so
the,
if the secretary went back and decided this and decided it the opposite way to what had occurred as a matter of law, then the alleged harms here would be affected just in the same fashion as the harms in Patchak if the decision had been reversed there. I understand that was convoluted, but is that not correct?
Yes, it is.
Yes, so you really don't, after Patchak, you really don't have a constitutional standing argument, do you?
Well, our constitutional standing, we might have one that you agree with, but our constitutional standing argument, it relates...
I don't agree with it, you don't have one. You studied the standing law of this circuit. I may be wrong the other direction.
Yes, I have.
But if I say they're standing, it's probably standing.
Our best case, Your Honor, and the one on which we rely is the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers. And that is our basis for saying there's no constitutional standing.
Don't you have a more fundamental problem, which is the district court found that the county would be injured, and you don't challenge those findings?
No, we don't. That's right.
So isn't that end that right there? We don't even have to look at any cases. That's the end of it. The district court found there was injury. You don't challenge it. End of case. I mean, end of standing argument. What's left to say about it?
What's left to say is that the court did not, in the standing context, consider the effect of the stipulated judgment.
That's the merits of the case. That has nothing to do with standing.
I'll move on to prudential standing.
All right.
You do so, do it briefly.
Yeah.
You may want to get to the merits.
Oh, all right. In our view, the IGRA bars review by the county, and their efforts here are to undo an agreement that was negotiated by the state with the tribe, by the governor, and approved by the state legislature. The structure of IGRA contemplates that the county participate through political means, but that it does not contemplate that after an agreement has been negotiated between a state and a tribe, that a subsidiary of one of the parties can come undo the agreement.
But the secretary approved the agreement. That's the argument. That's the agency action they're challenging.
Yeah.
They're challenging the secretary's approval of it. And we have a very strong assumption that agency actions like that are reviewable unless you can find, you know, unless the statute says it isn't reviewable or unless it's somehow committed to agency discretion. That's what they're challenging.
Right, I understand that, Your Honor.
Yeah.
So on the merits.
Well, let me just ask you one question. You rely very heavily on Sprint.
Yes.
Right, for your argument that
yes,
this is not reviewable. Let me ask you this about, it seems to me that the statutes in Sprint and in AT&T, which Sprint relied on, are different because here we have Section 2710, 2710D8C, right?
Right.
Which says that when there's agency, when the secretary doesn't act, it's approved, but only to the extent that the compact is consistent with the provisions of this chapter.
Right.
Now, we didn't have a statute like that in Sprint or AT&T.
No.
So doesn't that make this case very different? Because, you know, Congress itself is is saying, yes, this can be approved through inaction, but only to the extent that it's lawful. And those sound like the kind of judgments that we just routinely review.
There's nothing to review here, though.
Well, can we agree that it's reviewable? And then we'll go on to... Why do you say nothing? What's not to review? The statute includes standards. It has to be Indian country, right? Or Indian land. We know that. I mean, under your theory, the secretary could, knowing that a compact is not on Indian, it does not involve Indian land, could simply not act and allow an unlawful compact to be approved. Congress.
That's right. There's no requirement in IGRA that the secretary make an Indian lands determination.
That's pretty breathtaking. The statute requires that it be consistent with the chapter. The chapter applies on Indian land. So are you saying the secretary, I understood you to just say the secretary could approve a compact that had nothing to do with Indian land and it couldn't be reviewed?
That's right. That's our position.
How do you get around to the extent the compact's consistent with the provisions of this chapter?
Right.
What do you do with that language?
And that's AT&T and Sprint really are not that case.
Well, Sprint was a challenge to an agency action, so that we disagree with the reply brief on that point.
But but I asked you a different kind of question than the reply brief. I asked you a distinction between this case and Sprint that's different from the one in the reply brief, namely this, the different statute here.
Well,
I guess I haven't heard from you why that doesn't make this reviewable other than it's your position that it is.
The approval can't be unlawful because it's an approval only to the extent that an agreement is lawful.
Yeah, but I don't.
Find out if the agreement is lawful without reviewing it? You're standing there telling us it's to the extent that it's lawful.
That's right.
And you're saying we can't look to see if it's lawful. That's
our position.
Not just reading in a circle. That's a spiral. You're spinning completely off of the statute there.
Well.
What do you do with that language about to the extent that it's consistent with the provisions of this chapter? What does that mean?
Well, in another context, a party might be able to get review, or the National Indian Gaming Commission may make a determination that some aspect is unlawful and prosecute. Not every unlawful...
Counsel, we have lots of cases which say that simply because there's another possible avenue for raising the issue doesn't mean that the decision before us isn't reviewable. In fact, we have cases which say that you don't have to wait. A party doesn't have to wait and subject itself to possible civil or criminal liability in order to test the legality of an agency action. We have lots of cases that say that.
Yeah. In this instance, the agency didn't do anything, and Congress established a default whereby when the agency doesn't take...
put in there the language to the extent that it's consistent with the provisions of this chapter.
Wait, I think you're wasting time on this one. You ought to help us with the merits.
Yeah.
Hartwick looks... Counsel explains his position, why he thinks remand is possible. Hartwick looks strong in suggesting it might be dispositive. Is it or is it not in your view?
Hardwick is dispositive, and in addition, on the merits, the lands are reservation lands as defined by the statute, 27034.
In other words, how can we look at
the reg?
This is a motion to dismiss. How can we look at the paper record and make that determination with no doubt?
As
a matter of law, there's nothing inconsistent with the provisions of this chapter.
I think it's difficult on this record, Your Honor, because the record really wasn't developed here, as you note.
Rule
12b6 context, and our recommendation, if the court didn't affirm the dismissal, would be to remand. But regarding the scope of the 1987 stipulated judgment, it was not in the narrow tax context described by the county. It was in the case was brought in the context of a challenge to the termination of the Indian status and the reservation status.
Right, but your brief argues all of that as part of your argument about standing. It doesn't tell us why, assuming if we think you're wrong, that it's relevant to standing, why it's nevertheless preclusive on the merits. So I read your brief as saying that if we think, A, there's standing, and B, this is reviewable, that the government agrees with counsel for the county that we should remand.
That's correct.
Is that the way I read your brief?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Unless the court has any further questions.
No further questions. I see none. I thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. I do have another question. I'm sorry to prolong things, but you did refer to 2703 for all lands within the limits of any Indian reservation, and you're not going under 4703B, only under A, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
I'll be uncharacteristically brief, Your Honor.
We'd appreciate it.
I would note that the county stipulation was a stipulation to which the United States and the Secretary of the Interior were not even parties. It was a stipulation between counsel for the class plaintiff individual and the tax assessor and the Board of Supervisors. So again, we would just emphasize that we think there's the issues that would bind us to that stipulation, just the elements that would bind us to, simply are not here. And again, that's, for me, uncharacteristically brief. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. You need to read this.